creatures.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present The Forcecast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
It is the Forcecast for October 20th, 2006, your weekly dose of Star Wars. We are the official podcast for TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. This week's episode is brought to you by our good friends at Official Picks. When you're looking for Star Wars autographs and photos, you need not look any further than Official Picks. That's OfficialPicks.com, picks with an X. I am Jason, and with me as always, my good friend Pete.
Howdy, everybody.
And we wanted to start off this week's show by letting you know that we are aware that there are some problems with downloading the Forcecast via iTunes and uploading it onto your iPod. Apparently, it's causing some iPods to... the file stops playing, and it goes back to the beginning, or it resets or something. It's not going to blow up your iPod or anything, but it is kind of annoying, and it gets, halfway through the show or whatever it does. I'm not personally having that problem, but I'm aware that there are some folks that are. So... our good buddy Jay Shepard, Jovial Jay, has sort of troubleshooted this for us, and here's the solution that he's come up with for him, and it apparently has helped some others as well. Okay, so before the iPod syncs with iTunes, you want to open the podcast section in iTunes. You select the podcast you're having problems with, and you want to get info on it. Okay, so you can right-click, if you're a Windows user, right-click on the podcast and click the Get Info option. Now, if you're a Mac user, I apologize. I don't really know what the Mac equivalent is here. So, but for Windows users, it's a right click. You get info. You go to the Options tab, and there's a start time. And you can set the start time to 0.01 and then resync it to the iPod, and that should fix the problem. So if you are having any problems with the Forcecast, getting it through iTunes, or getting it uploaded to your MP3 player, please drop us a line at podcast@theforce.net or our voicemail. You can Skype us, username Forcecast, all together, that's one word. And or you can give us a call, 330-871-4TFN, because we are definitely looking into that, and we hope to get that resolved as soon as possible. Now, we do have some happy news this week.
We would certainly like to congratulate and wish all the best to our good buddy Dustin Roberts and his fiancée, soon-to-be wife Shannon, who are getting married this coming weekend. Good luck to both of you, and enjoy your time on your honeymoon.
Yeah, they're going to Maui. Wowie. They're getting married today, as a matter of fact. As this show goes live, they're getting married today.
I think I'm going to Maslin.
What, next week?
No, tomorrow. Just mini honeymoon for me.
Well, all the best to our good buddy Dustin Roberts and his fiancée Shannon. We're very happy for them, and we'll be happy to have Dustin back, undistracted by all this wedding garbage. Sorry, Shannon. I kid. Speaking of festivities, we've got a holiday coming up here pretty soon. We've got Halloween. It is time for Rebel Scum's annual 2006 costume contest. And just like last year, they'll be accepting submissions starting October 17th and running through November 1st. So here are the rules. Now, they've changed slightly, so listen up. 1. All costumes must be Star Wars themed and in good taste. We all know what good taste is and what good taste is not.
Some of us better than others.
That's right. Now, you also have to include your name with your entry. It's one entry per person and one photo per entry. So don't send multiple shots. You know, just find the best one, you know, that shows off the costume and send it on in. At least one person in the photo must be holding a Star Wars action figure, because this is Rebel Scum, okay? And we want at least one person in the photo holding, it can be any Star Wars action figure, vintage, modern, it doesn't matter. No convention photos. We want to make sure that these are actual Halloween costumes and you're ready to go out trick-or-treating or you're going to your masquerade party or whatever. Now, if you've previously won in any category, you're not going to be permitted to enter the costume for which you've won. Okay, so if you've already won anything, you're not going to be able to re-enter. Okay. Now, all entries need to be in JPEG format, no exceptions. And again, they will be accepting submissions from October 17th until 12 o'clock p.m., or that's Pacific time, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on November 1st. Winners will be announced November 3rd. And so check that out at rebelscum.com. We'll have a link to all these rules and the details, as well as the photo gallery as it gets started, at our show notes at theforce.net and rebelscum.com. And speaking of promotions, we have our own little promotion going on here at the Force Cast. We are asking you to help us out. We want to be in the top 10 by Halloween, October 31st, over at podcastalley.com. And it's very, very simple. If you just log on to podcastalley.com, you do a search for the Force Cast, and you'll find our little profile, and there's a little button there that says vote. And all they do is ask you for your email address. You just put in your email address, and they will send you a confirmation email like, do you really want to vote for the Force Cast? Keep in mind, your vote will not be counted unless you click the link in the email that they send you. So make sure you do that. If you can't find it somehow on podcastalley.com, you can always go to theforce.net or rebelscum.com. We've got direct links to our show's profile there.
Yeah, we can make it even easier. There's a button right on the left side of theforce.net that says vote on Podcast Alley.
Or
if you click on our show notes, we'll have a direct link there as well. So make it real easy for you. You just click through, hit vote, and we're doing real well right now. We are in the top 10.
Yes.
So if the contest were to end today, which of course it doesn't, we would be giving away 10 straight days of prizes at this point from official picks. So keep the votes going. We're moving up and down. We're sliding a little bit. We want to make sure we stay in the top 10. So go over there if you haven't voted yet, and make sure you do it for us.
Yeah, and on your way over there, go tell Lord Voldemort that Lord Vader said hi. The Potter kids need a good what for. They've been on the top 10 for so long, and we need to show them what the real franchise is.
Knock them down a peg a little bit.
So you might be wondering, well, what's in it for me? Like Pete said, what's in it for you is if we do end up in the top 10, like he just said, 10 straight days of giveaways here at the Force Cast, also at the rebelscum.com and theforce.net, 10 straight days of giveaways, prizes from our good friends at Official Picks. So you don't want to miss out on that. We also have another contest that we're going to be talking about a little bit later with the DVD release of the George and Me documentary. So stay tuned for that.
And of course, stick around for part two of our interview with Fanboys director Kyle Newman, who joins us again to regale us with his Star Wars anecdotes and give us a little more insight on the film.
That's all coming your way, plus your Star Wars tales. We've got some great voicemails and emails to share with you. A lot to cover this week. Let's punch it.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
And in a follow-up to a story we announced a couple of weeks ago, the Star Wars saga in high definition that we were so excited about, I was just ecstatic. Well, there's a catch. In order to see it in high definition, you have to live in the right area. You have to be a Comcast subscriber. So all of us in the Midwest and the Northeast that are Time Warner subscribers, why? Because we have to. Will not be getting the saga in HD. However, we do get Cinemax. We have the option of getting Cinemax, and we'll get it in standard definition. So, if you are within the sound of my voice and you are a Comcast subscriber, you can enjoy the Star Wars saga in high definition beginning November 2nd all the way through December 28th. But if you do not, if you subscribe to Time Warner or Maslin Cable...
The three of you out there that are listening from Maslin.
Right. Or any of the major satellite providers, you're out of luck. I'm not real happy about this. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm teed off that they would do something like this, that Lucasfilm would agree to unveil the saga in high def, but not for everybody. You know, you and I had talked about this before. You know, I thought, heck, put it on pay-per-view. I'd be willing to pay, you know, $39.99 or whatever it would be for the whole saga, you know, for 13 hours and maybe have it available all weekend. I'd pay that, but I at least want the option. I'm not even getting the option because I don't live in the right area.
It's discrimination.
I don't know about it. I might go that far.
Don't like us Midwest guys.
That's right. Yeah, I tell you, you people out on the West Coast, you just think that the world ends at the border.
That we were going to have to project it onto our cows, and that was going to end it for us anyway. It wouldn't be in, it would be in fur high definition, so we wouldn't get it. So
that's right. Well, you know what, though? I guess I can sympathize with our friends that aren't here in the States. I mean, they, you know, I don't even know if they have Cinemax elsewhere outside of the U.S. So hopefully, wherever you are, and even here, I'm guessing that, can HBO be far behind on this? Is this something that maybe Lucasfilm will take and kind of rotate amongst the big movie channels on cable? I don't know. There's no mention of that. So, call me disappointed. Now, a few weeks ago, actually, I think it was on one of our first couple of shows, we had a story about auditions for Jedi Knight characters and at the one of the Disney parks. Well, there you've gone a step further. Some new ads found on Monster.com. Wanted, Darth Vader. Wanted, Darth Maul. Here's what it says in the ad. Disneyland Resort is holding an open call for outgoing, energetic performers to portray famous Star Wars character Darth Vader in an all-new outdoor show. So, the auditions are Wednesday, October 25th, 4 o'clock at the Casting Center at 700 West Ball Road in Anaheim. Here is the role description. Name, Darth Vader. Male, 6'4" with an athletic build and strong movement skills. Sword training a plus. For additional position and audition information, please check out www.disneyauditions.com or you can call their job line at 1-800-766-0888. And also wanted, Darth Maul. The audition date is a day earlier, Tuesday, October 24th at 4 o'clock. Same location, 700 West Ball Road in Anaheim. Here's what they're asking for Darth Maul. Male, 5'8" to 5'10" with an athletic build and strong movement skills. Staff/bow training a plus. And again, for additional information, check it out at DisneyAuditions.com. Special thanks to our reader, Don Lee, for the heads up about this. Well, I'm out on both.
Disney wants guys with skills. I don't have any skills.
Right. Sword skills, like, and bow training.
Like bow staff skills and sword skills. I'm still in the running for Darth Maul.
Are you?
Right up until they say athletic build.
Well, I was kind of wondering. I know Ray Park is not the tallest guy in the world, and I don't know if he's even 5'8".
That'd be great if he showed up and they said, "You're just not what we're looking for." Quoting from StarWars.com, a few weeks back, stalwart defender of America Stephen Colbert challenges loyal viewers to customize video footage of him battling unseen ne'er-do-wells with a lightsaber against green screen. The response was a tidal wave of user-generated videos that pitted Colbert against enemies ranging from super battle droids, rancors, and three-headed Democrats. The winner was crowned last week with a surprise entry just at the end. George L. from California jumped onto the scene with a updated version of what he took from the green screen. Now, George L., if you haven't already heard or haven't seen, was actually George Lucas, and he joined Colbert on set. And they debuted, well, I guess they didn't debut, but they showed his footage, and he didn't win.
No, he came in second by like one-tenth of a percentage point.
One-tenth of a point. A 39.9 out of a possible 40. But a perfect score went to Bonnie, who was the actual winner, who took it in a close competition, who did something that wasn't really Star Wars related, but was quite humorous anyway. George was very disappointed.
Yeah, that look on his face was just too funny.
Yeah, and he played the straight man pretty well, so... he did not come away empty-handed, though. He did get an irregular T-shirt that they couldn't sell online and a mug for his trouble.
I love the end. I mean, the bit that they put together with Jar Jar was cool. It was clearly, you know, Ahmed Best doing the voice. Very funny to hear him, you know, back into that character. And some good political satire in the dialogue. What killed me was seeing him in the cockpit of the Jedi Starfighter as it was coming through and just looked... That part looked bad, but it was so funny. It was like, you know, it was ILM. They could have made it look fantastic, but they still made it look like amateurs in certain, you know, portions of it. So it was very, very funny. And then the lightsaber duel at the end between George and Colbert was great.
That was very reminiscent of old Ben and Darth Vader in A New Hope, as there was not much movement that went on. They kind of just spun around each other a couple times, and George had the upper hand most of the time, mostly because I don't think he was going to go down, even if he hit him pretty hard.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I like the force push move that he gave, too. So if you haven't seen this, check it out at StarWars.com. There's clips of it. You can also check it out at YouTube. Pretty much the whole episode is over there.
Now, there's only one thing that I wanted to get on that I'm surprised we haven't heard more about as of yet. And that's, does George Lucas's appearance on the Colbert Report, which is fairly liberal in its view and, you know, pretty much has got that.
Do you find it? Genre. I don't know that I find it liberal. I think I kind of find it sort of the just against the status quo.
It's mostly satiristic. But
right.
In the same vein, is that going to fuel speculation that all of the Star Wars films have political means behind them and that the prequels were actually a political statement by George to stand up against America?
Well, yeah. And
I've seen that article a couple times, and it just makes me laugh.
It does me, too. I mean, I chalk up the politicizing of these films right along with the fact that, or the idea that, you know, the films are racist or the films are, you know...
Sexist.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are going to see what they want to see. And it just, I don't pay any attention. I just laugh at it.
I don't either. But you know that there's somebody out there who goes, oh, look who George Lucas is friends with.
StarWars.com received the honor of being voted the best official website in the recent poll we discussed 2 weeks earlier over at movies.com. Well, the Star Wars franchise took home several other awards as well. The Star Wars saga itself won Favorite Franchise, while Mrs. Skywalker Natalie Portman took home Favorite Actress. Harrison Ford also made an appearance on the list for Favorite Old Fogey to return to the screen in the much-anticipated Indiana Jones 4. And as a side note, the OneRing.net took Favorite Unofficial Movie Website, beating out the Force.net. So, seems like they had their hobbits on vote patrol.
I was unaware that there were computers in the Shire.
Well, hats off to them. It is a nice sight. But if they do this again next year, which it sounds like it is, we are going to go on an all-out war. It's going to make that last battle in the third Lord of the Rings film look like nothing when the Force.net runs wild on you, brother.
Mimico and Lucasfilm Limited announced the officially licensed Star Wars-themed Mimobot designer USB flash drives at Digital Life in New York City. Darth Vader is the first in the Star Wars Mimobot series, marking the first time the Dark Lord of the Sith will ever appear on a data storage drive in the U.S. In the coming weeks, three more Star Wars characters will be revealed, all of which will be available in 1, 2, and 4 gigabyte capacities. Pre-orders have already begun online for the Darth Vader Mimobot, and the prices will range from $79.95 to $169.95. Now, if you haven't checked these out, definitely head over to TheForce.net and RebelsGun. Haven't got any info on who the other characters are yet, but they'll be released here sometime in the next couple weeks. If you are a fan of these, make sure you jump in as quickly as possible on StarWarsShop.com because they are going to be limited to between 2,500 and 3,500 units. So it's always nice to, if you have to transport your files, have them in a Star Wars figure.
I just got one of these flash drives a few weeks ago. Not this type, but just a flash drive in general. And I don't know what I did without it before because I don't have my laptop and my desktop networked together. I've tried. I just can't get it to work right. I just get frustrated. So, you know, I can transport files to work and I can put them on my laptop and my desktop, so I really like it. And these are very cool because they come preloaded with content. So the, let's see, what do we got on here? Apparently, most of the Mimoco Mimobots come with exclusive content. In this case, it's going to come loaded with avatars, wallpapers, videos, sound bites. Ooh, maybe we can use some of those on the Forcecast here. But then they are very limited, like you said. So if you know, there are a lot of collectors out there that like weird stuff. You know, they just like kind of the most obscure things. You know, they go into the Five and Dime or the local store, and you see some of the strangest things. Like, I was at some store, and they had a... like a giant Darth Vader Revenge of the Sith frisbee thing. It was like it was almost like a kite material. It was very, very bizarre. But I know that there's a market out there for collectors that like this weirdo stuff. And this definitely fits that description, I would say.
Yeah, I'm not real sure about the design. I think they're very cool. However, I don't know why they went with such an elongated face. You think they could just kind of proportionate the body a little bit, but
it's that Japanime style is what they're going for here.
It looks like they weren't real sure how big to make it, so they made it really small, and they're like, oh, it doesn't fit. Well, stretch the head.
Hey, Lord Vader, why the long face? And some news in brief for you. Good friend of TheForce.net, Steve Anderson, is now the currently featured artist over at StarWars.com. Now, most of you have probably seen his work and don't even know it, but Steve has appeared on everything from neckties to book covers. So go ahead and click on our link at our show notes to find out more about this very talented Star Wars artist.
On Saturday, October 21st, the Kentucky Star Wars Collectors Club will be holding their third annual Fall Festival at the Brownsboro Community Center. Festivities begin at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Food will be served beginning at 2 p.m. Fried chicken and barbecue will be provided. Please bring a dish to share. They'll have goodies and prizes for their paid membership. And there will also be a Star Wars swap meet, so bring anything you would like to sell or trade. They will also be raffling off a quarter-scale Sideshow Collectibles Han statue. There will be tons of games and activities for the kids as well. So hopefully you'll be able to make it out there, and you can check in at kswcc.com.
Our good friends over at Five Heads Tall Productions, the production company responsible for the documentary George and Me, wanted to alert ForceCast listeners that they have a special pricing promotion going on for buying the DVD of the film. Any forum member of TheForce.net, as well as a few other websites, you can check out the link for details to what sites those are, is entitled to a 40% off discount on the price of the DVD. Apparently, they've been very, very happy with the sales success of these DVDs, and it's gone way beyond their wildest hopes, they say. And as a special thank you to everyone who has helped to get the film made and promote the film, they're offering this special one-time discount to anyone that goes to the link that is provided there on our show notes. So if you haven't gotten a copy of this yet, now's a great time, 40% off, so you can't beat that. Actually, you can beat that, and we're about to do so. We have two copies of the George and Me documentary that we want to give away. So how are we going to do this, you ask? Two ways. Pete's got a trivia question, and I've got a trivia question. The first person to email the answer to Pete's trivia question to podcast@theforce.net is going to win a copy of the George and Me documentary DVD. The first person to voicemail the answer to my question, either Skype us at username ForceCast or give us a call at 330-871-4TFN, will get a copy of the DVD as well. So, Pete, what is your question?
Now, remember, this is the answer that's going to be emailed to the podcast at force.net. What is the name of the Simpsons character that parodies George Lucas? What is the name of the Simpsons character that parodies George Lucas?
Now, our resident Simpsons expert here, Mr. Nadel, how many times has this character appeared in the series? Do you know?
Just once.
Just once. But it was a very memorable appearance.
It was a very, very memorable episode.
Okay. Now, my question, if you haven't noticed, the theme of these questions are George Lucas. Is George Lucas, being that this is the George and Me documentary, my question, you got to give us a voicemail, drop us a voicemail at 330-871-4TFN, or if you got Skype, and there's no reason why you shouldn't, because it's absolutely free and you'll love it. Just look for username ForceCast. Here's my question. We all know the history of George and his near-death experience, the car crash that nearly took his life, kind of woke him up to why is he here on this earth? A question that his films have inspired all of us to ask ourselves and answer in our own way. What was the day, month, and year of that fateful crash? That's the question. So you need to drop us a voicemail. Once again, 330-871-4TFN or Skype us at ForceCast. And you will win a copy of George and Me on DVD. So the only way to do this, I mean, obviously the emails are timestamped and the voicemails are timestamped, so we're going to know the first correct answer to Pete's question via email, the first correct answer to my question via voicemail is going to walk away with the prize.
The 501st and the Rebel Legion will be making their third consecutive appearance at Yes I Can's Strike Against Child Abuse. That'll be Sunday, October 22nd. Now, tickets are $10. It's from 12 to 4 p.m., and it is a bowling afternoon, and your $10 ticket includes two games of bowling and a light lunch. Make sure you head on over to their website, or you can purchase the tickets at the door for this event, which is going to be happening at the Canoga Park Bowl on Van Owen Street in Winnetka, California.
That's pretty cool. Bowling Stormtroopers. Bowling, not bowling for Stormtroopers, bowling with Stormtroopers.
I think they make better pins.
And some late breaking news for those of you planning to attend the Syracuse Heroes Expo this weekend. Everyone's favorite Zabrakan Sith Lord, Ray Park, will be in attendance. For more details, check out the website. The link is on our show notes at theforce.net and rebelscum.com.
And our last story comes from usatoday.com, where they've posted the 101 most influential people who never lived. Coming in at number one, the Marlboro Man, and at 101, Paul Bunyan. So how does this relate to Star Wars? Well, of course there's a Star Wars character that popped up in there. Coming in at number 85 is none other than Luke Skywalker, everybody's favorite farm boy and Jedi Knight. Absolutely, very influential. I'm actually very surprised that there weren't other Star Wars characters that popped up. I mean, where's Darth Vader?
I am too. I mean, 101. I mean, everything between the Marlboro Man and Paul Bunyan? Who's influenced by Paul Bunyan?
And the people influenced by the Marlboro Man are apparently dying off very quickly, so...
And that's your Star Wars news for this week. As always, check out theforce.net and rebelscum.com for our show notes that have links to all the stories we talked about.
And now part two of our chat with Fanboys director Kyle Newman.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Now, the film is actually about leading up to the release of Episode One, The Phantom Menace. Take us back to where you were. Where was Kyle Newman in the spring of 1999 leading up to the release of this movie?
Well, in spring of 99, I was standing on a street corner in Manhattan. I just graduated from NYU like a year prior, and I was doing some writing for television.
Okay.
And I was still finishing up my senior thesis, you know, the last bunch of posts on it, and making a lot of trips out to Los Angeles trying to get my career started.
Right.
So, I remember reading the novel before it came out.
Oh, did you really?
Which people were like, you can't do that. But, you know, for me, this is what it's really about. It's not about having to see it as a film or only seeing it as a film. It's about the story, the core below it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't care if it was told to me as a film or in a book. I actually think one of the best Star Wars stories out there is the Episode 3 book adaptation. Because it's almost like the psychological companion to the movie.
It is. It's
like
fantastic.
If you have 13 hours or whatever it is to sit around and listen to it,
you're right.
It's phenomenal because you experience it in a way that, you know, almost the movie could never do, because it's, you know,
exactly.
It's got 2 hours, but you know the story's bigger and more epic, and it's almost more, there's more psychologically going on than you could ever even fit in a film.
Sure.
And knowing that it's the culmination of all this, you know, this 30-year journey, you know, making this whole saga. They could put a lot into it, and there's a lot of analysis going on, and it just fills in so many gaps. And I thought that the movie experience isn't only the movies,
right?
It's the story, and how I connect to it.
Right. Now, looking at when you went from being just a couple of years old, a year old or whatever, and fast forward to 99, 2002, 2005, the release, you're looking at it from a different set of eyes. You're starting your career, you're actually in the business. How did it change your perception of how you looked at the prequels versus the original trilogy?
It's just, whenever you look at a Star Wars film, especially if you're a filmmaker, it just seems like so much bigger than you will ever get to, you know, that place. What George Lucas kind of created for himself and what he could pull off, and it gives you a place to aspire to.
Right.
You know, like I would, that'd be an obviously career goal to be able to be autonomous from like the Hollywood system, have my own like production facility, be able to fund $100 million plus independent movies.
Right.
That no one has a say over the script. I mean, people can say whatever they want about the movies he ended up making with the prequels, but at the end of the day, he made his own films. He wrote them himself. And he funded himself, and he saw out the vision that was in his head.
Right.
And that's as pure as you can get in filmmaking.
Absolutely.
No matter what you're doing, you're dealing with people's opinions. Somebody else wants you to cast somebody else. Somebody else wants you to change a line. Somebody will say something that's not right, or you got to put something in for product placement. I mean, he didn't have to do any of that. He created a system and a place where he could make the films he wanted to make for better or worse, despite what anyone say about him. You know, I'm sure as an artist, he's probably pretty satisfied that he challenged himself to make it digital and to push the boundaries of effects and to put more in them than probably people were even expecting to pull off.
So you feel he's definitely deserved of the title independent filmmaker?
I mean, I don't think there's anybody else that's even more. I mean, if you're going to judge, there's two ways to look at it. Do you judge independent in terms of content, or do you judge independent in terms of the process of the creation?
Right.
And if it's purely based on the process of creation, which is how I interpret it,
mm-hmm.
He's free to put whatever he wants, make a movie about whatever he wants with that money. He made it independently. He just chose to make it about something mainstream so that people would respond to. So, yeah, he's probably the king of independent filmmakers. I mean, even Empire and Return of the Jedi were more or less independent films. He put his own money back into them because he had faith in himself.
Right. And made that huge gamble with the merchandising and taking a dive on his own salary just to retain the rights to the films.
Yep. I mean, I think that's what it is. I mean, the real independent filmmakers have a certain amount of faith, and no matter what anybody will do or say, they find a way to get it done. And
right.
He was smart, and he found an opportunity to carve out a bigger future for himself to make other projects and to do things that he probably would never have been allowed to do. And I think that his thinking was independent in and of itself.
Absolutely.
You know, he didn't want to do the system that was in front of him, so he created his own, and he actually beat him at their own game. So I think, yeah, he's to me like he's an interesting role model as a filmmaker.
Great.
Okay, so Kyle, kind of take us from being a fan into having a career, you know, and what you did with your career. And I know you sold yourself a little bit short by saying that this was going to be the first project to come on the scene, but I do know several people who have seen The Hollow. So don't sell yourself short on the fact that there's no other films out there.
No, I mean, this is the first theatrical release. The Hollow was actually, you know, it's one of the best experiences I've ever gone through. I was in Los Angeles pitching a comedy, an animated comedy, because I do a lot of animation stuff. And I was supposed to go home the next day, and I got a phone call. And it was a friend of mine, kind of frantic. He actually left 9 messages and said, "I need to meet you at Starbucks, like, now." So I go to meet him, and he slides a script across the table, and it was for The Hollow. And it was this modern-day Legend of Sleepy Hollow, you know, like a PG-13 kind of film, adventure horror. And I was like, "Cool, I'll read it." He's like, "No, no time to read it. We're shooting today in an hour. We have to take you to set right now."
Oh,
I thought he was kidding. And there's like a guy on the street waving from a van, and I'm like, "Oh my God, he's serious." So I was like, "Okay, I'll do it." You know, and it was a Sunday, so I couldn't talk to any of my representatives or anything. And the next thing I know, I'm just on set shooting this movie, and I hadn't even read the script. But, you know, they needed a director, and their original director had fallen out at the last minute, and they were 4 days into production already. So I just,
wow,
you know, went in guns blazing and tried to win over people as much as I could and figure out where we were in the script and where each character was. And it was hard. I mean, it makes you realize my background is in storyboarding, and I love movies to be prepped to an excess so I can then deviate on set. And stepping into this, it was a good challenge, because here I am, I don't have storyboards, I don't know the actors, I don't know the crew, and I'm the one making all the decisions. But it was like, it forced me to be instinctual.
Right.
And
right.
I made a lot of mistakes on the movie, and I did a lot of good things. And in the end, you know, we got onto ABC Family, and it was one of their top, you know, original things of the year.
Awesome.
And we got nominated for some sound awards. So there was like, there's good things that came out of it. You know, and I made some good close friends. And the experience itself, though, was like the best education I could have ever had beyond school, you know, and film. It was, you know, it was just figure it out. There's no other option but to figure it out before the sun sets.
Yeah, getting thrown in the deep end.
And it forces you to rely on all the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put your faith in the actor. You put your faith in the DP. You put your faith in all these other people who are experts. And that's really my style. Is I'm the expert on anything. There's always somebody that knows more than me. It's through me that I like an idea of what it should be, and I take the strengths of what people are bringing to the table and their ideas and keep it channeled and focused on an end goal where I know we should go. And, you know, you want to encourage people around you to do what they do even better and give them the room to do that. And I think that experience actually, you know, helped me kind of formulate that philosophy, you know, and kind of like the way I already felt about things and thought about things, but I was forced into executing it, you know. So The Hollow is an interesting story.
Yeah. Well, now you said it was nominated for some sound awards, but you're not really any stranger to awards. Kind of run down some of the other, your shorts have been nominated for lots of film festival awards. Kind of give us a rundown of what those were and what you've gotten yourself into so far.
My first film, I was like an underclassman film at NYU, and nominated at a couple of festivals. That was like a short film about reincarnation. It's all visual and there's no dialogue, and everything was like the Hollywood Film Festival and a couple other ones out on the West Coast. And then I won the Coca-Cola Refreshing Filmmakers Award, which was like a competition open to a lot of the top film schools. And then I made it to the first round of that, and they gave me $10,000 to go make a short, $5,000 actually, to make a short, 1 minute short about magic of movie going experience. And then that was like a big national competition, and I won that. And then the film ended up on 19,000 screens as a pre-feature short, and that was in 98. And you know, that opened a lot of doors for me, and I was able to formulate relationships with people that I'm still talking to and doing business with now. And I think that was an important first step. But I did another science fiction film, which was out in Sundance and a couple of other places. And then I did another animated documentary, like an experimental documentary, which was also part of Sundance and Tribeca. So I've done a lot of shorts, each in very different genres and different subject matters. And now I'm doing, you know, comedy. It was never really where I expected to be.
Right.
But
so how did you go from that kid that wrote that essay in seventh grade where the teacher thought you weren't being serious to, you know, having being on the verge here of having a pretty good feature film out there, and especially in a career path that people say, ah, you'll never make it, you know, it's just determination or what is it?
You.
Yeah,
it's, you know what it is, it's determination, and it's about the people you surround yourself with and you work with, and you encourage people, and hopefully you help their ideas, and then they inspire your ideas. And you know, I went to college as a freshman. I made a lot of good friends with it. It's just really smart people that wanted to do the same thing, and you help each other. And I think, you know, there's different filmmakers that are moving up together. Like my DP went to NYU with me, and my good friend Jonathan Liesman just directed the new Texas Chainsaw film coming out in like a week. And you know, we're all on like the same upward path. So
yeah.
My friend James Cox was another guy at school. Like, as soon as you met him, you know, there was something special about him. And he directed Wonderland, which was Val Kilmer. And,
yeah.
You know, you would just kind of be inspired by people. And you almost pull each other along.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you're talking about kind of a clique of up-and-coming filmmakers, not unlike Coppola, Scorsese, Lucas, Spielberg, you know, 30 or 40 years ago.
I think that was maybe in the back of my head. I mean, you saw what worked for the people that whose work you responded to, and there was something organic about how it happened, and there's also something, you know, I'm sure they had a plan too,
mm-hmm.
which they did. And
what
and
I
for
love
me is always like I'm very, very determined. Like, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs, there isn't anything that gets in the path of me doing what I want to do.
That's great. What I love about hearing about those early days of Coppola and Lucas and Scorsese and Spielberg is that they really supported each other. I mean, certainly there's that kind of friendly competitiveness between Spielberg and Lucas, but it's pretty interesting in an industry that's very competitive, these guys remain friends. I mean, you're seeing that with your own group of filmmaker friends, right?
Yeah, I mean, I ultimately don't just want to direct, and I don't just want to write. I want to produce and do films that I think another filmmaker would be phenomenal, you know, to make, you know, better than me, or it's more their wheelhouse. It's like, I want to bring them a project, or if they've got a project, I want to help them get it made, even if it's like in any capacity I can. So even if it's a producer, I'm not really hell-bent on directing everything. So like with mm-hmm. Jonathan, I'm developing a couple of projects because I know he's got a really unique eye and a specialized skill set, and there's things that he's going to excel at that, you know, I'll never be as good at. So
right.
It's that kind of process. It's an openness to doing whatever and putting the story first as to what's going to be the best thing to get this thing made in its most optimal form.
So
and that being the first and foremost thing I look at with any project, and maybe it's not me as a director, but maybe it's me working with somebody else as a writer or a different role, different capacity.
So if someone's out there listening and they're saying to themselves, gosh, all I can think about is making movies someday, whether being, you know, an actor in a film or being a director or being a writer, is it the degree or is it the training that you get while you're in film school? I mean, what's the most important thing about making it or having a chance to making it? You mentioned determination, but there's obviously a process. You went through a process too.
It's it's the attitude. I think it's a mentality, and it's obviously something, you know, there's every turn there's somebody waiting to kind of beat you down or say no, and it's obviously an expensive pursuit. You know, if you want to go to film school, it's a risky kind of degree to pursue. I mean, the best thing you can do is, even if you're not going to go to school, is just get in with a community of people that are doing it, that have the same kind of passion. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot do almost anything alone. You know, mm-hmm. It's this, unlike painting and things like that, which I do, that's for me. You know, I can do that. You need money to make movies, you know, for the most part, and you need people. There's a million crew positions, and there's people that love doing sound, and, you know, you got to meet those people. There's people that, you know, just want to shoot it, but aren't necessarily eager to work with actors, and you got to find those people. And it's really about the community, unlike any of the other art forms. I mean, it brings in, you know, everything. It's like this film I'm working on right now. It's, you have to work with, we're getting a magician coach, we're getting a guy to teach people singing, football coordinators. There's specialists for everything. You know, it's just, I would start with small short films and things that you're passionate about and try and see them through. Because there's like a good reward each time you see something through, and then the next one doesn't seem so daunting. And then before you know it, you're doing a feature and you're finding a way to pull it off.
And join us next week for part 3 of our chat with Kyle.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
He's worth a lot to me.
And we'll start off our Hasbro news with a check-in with our good buddy Dan Curto. Now, Pete, as you know, that Dan has been hard at work with creating and monitoring this polling to see what the fans and the readers of RebelScum.com want to see as straight repacks now for the 2007 Greatest Hits wave. And the sky's the limit in terms of what's available. So we're getting close to the end of this. Well,
there's some big news in this that we need to... We can't really prep the fans for it. We'll let Dan be the one who tells us, but there's a couple exclusive that he drops on us as far as what's going to be available in the actual final polling and what's not that might surprise some people. So, and he gives us a reason as to why. So,
we think you'll like the reason why.
Yes.
So here we go. Here's our talk with Dan.
Just to reiterate, what we want to do is get the fan feedback for the Greatest Hits line in 2007, okay? And what we've been doing for the past 2 weeks is polling in our forums to get our members' views on what they think were the best figures of each line. Power of the Force 2, Episode 1, Power of the Jedi, et cetera, et cetera. All the way up to Saga Collection this year. And now that we've got all the results in, we're moving on to round 2. Okay, and the way that that's going to work is the top 64, we're going to rank them in order of number of votes, are going to face off in a bracket-style tournament. So every day they'll be going head-to-head for the next 11 days, starting tomorrow. And one interesting thing, and this is kind of an exclusive for you guys, nobody knows this yet, the number one figure of the entire competition was the VOTC Stormtrooper. There's one thing, though. The VOTC Stormtrooper is not eligible. So the VOTC Stormtrooper is not going to be in the rankings because it's being released in the regular 30th Anniversary Collection line. Fans rejoice. It's coming back, but there's a twist. The 30th Anniversary Collection is not meant to be a straight repack line. There's going to be some retooling done to each of the figures that are going to be coming out. We've seen that with the Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's got a new head. Mace Windu is an all-new figure. There's some new stuff with the R2-D2. The Stormtrooper that's coming out in the 30th Anniversary line will have a removable helmet. There's an exclusive scoop. Nobody knows about that yet. The top figure in Revenge of the Sith was the 327th Star Corps Trooper, which was released as part of the Evolution set back in 2005. Unfortunately, that's not eligible for the Greatest Hits line either. And the reason that is because it's going to be released in the Battle of Felucia battle pack. So since they are coming out, Hasbro and I have talked about this, and they said we wanted to really leave the voting selection as open as possible, so figures that they already had plans for were taken out of consideration. So there's a couple of scoops right there, and we'll have more information and some more scoops on Friday when I post the results. But then the big news is, on Saturday, we're going to go into the tournament, which is the March Madness-style bracket that we talked about last week. And that's going to run, like I said before, that's going to run daily, starting with 16 polls, and it's not going to be in the forum. For round two, we want to open it up to everybody. So we're really encouraging other websites to link to this. You know, of course, our listeners to vote in the poll, our readers to vote in the poll, everybody. I mean, it's open to everybody this time. They'll be on Rebel Scum's front page. There's a separate page that I've set up that'll be revealed on Saturday morning. So Saturday, I think it runs from midnight to midnight. So Saturday at midnight, we're going to have round one, part one. Sunday will be round one, part two, and so on and so forth until we get to the final, you know, showdown between the top two favorite figures.
And we'd like to bring you up to speed on the third annual Canadian Star Wars Toy Expo, taking place this weekend, October 22nd, 2006, at the Holiday Inn, Burlington. You can check out all the details at StarWarsExpo.com. They'll have a great selection of vintage toys and the latest releases from today, plus special guests, the 501 Garrison, in full Star Wars costume. So some great photo opportunities there. So don't forget the camera. More details have surfaced on the 30th anniversary collection, but chalk this up as rumor for the time being. This is, of course, pending official confirmation, but here we have, speculatively, 30th anniversary collection Wave 2. Are you ready? Now we're talking about the 3 3/4 Hasbro line. Biggs Darklighter, Death Star Trooper, Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, Rebel Sentry Honor Guard, and Macquarie Concept Boba Fett. Now I'm guessing from this assortment of characters, we're probably looking at an Episode 4 wave here with Biggs. Rumored to be Biggs as he looked in the cutscene of Episode 4 New Hope when he had the cape going and the little encounter with Luke at Anchorhead. Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, clearly most likely going to be versions from A New Hope of some sort. I don't know how they can get any different on those. Maybe the slick back hair from the trash compactor or something. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see. There's probably all kinds of speculation over at the forums here at RebelScum.com. The Death Star Trooper, now we've known about this one. This is going to kind of complete or help to complete the lineup on the Early Bird package. Some disappointment if this turns out to be the case, because I think a lot of folks were holding out for this to be part of the Vintage line next year for the Death Star Trooper. But apparently there's a good chance that it's not going to be. Rebel Sentry Honor Guard from the end of A New Hope. Now, that actually leads me to believe that maybe the Han and Luke will be ceremonial versions, updated versions of those figures, which would be kind of neat. I don't think they've done a Han Solo ceremonial. They did the Luke as part of the Power of the Force 2 line, but no Han, so that would be nice to see. And the Macquarie concept Boba Fett, pretty self-explanatory. Now, Wave 3, Darth Vader, of course.
Of course.
What's any assortment without Darth Vader? Ellis Hellrot, Jawa Droid, and Lynn Droid, Luke Skywalker, Miyum Onith, Stormtrooper, and the Macquarie concept Chewbacca. Not a bad assortment. Not a bad assortment. You got some newbies in there.
A lot of newbies in there, so it'll at least be something to look forward to along that line.
Yeah. Now, the Order 66 two-packs, that's something else. Just when you thought it was safe to check your toy aisle, the Revenge of the Sith figures are back. Order 66 two-packs. We do have some DPCI codes, so check that out at RebelScum.com. Anakin Skywalker, an Airborne Trooper. Darth Vader with Commander Bao. Emperor with Shock Trooper. Mace Windu with Galactic Marine. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Utapau Clone Trooper. Yoda and Kashyyyk Trooper. Commander Nio with Speeder Bike. Salukami Trooper with Speeder Bike. I know I didn't pronounce that right. That's kind of interesting. So we got to move some Revenge of the Sith figures again by packing them with a trooper. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. It'll work.
It'll work. And also some battle packs. Battle of Geonosis, Capture of Tantive IV, and Jedi Training on Dagobah. So there you have it. Now, again, these are rumors for what is going to make the second and third wave of 30th Anniversary Collection figures, and also those Order 66 two-packs. Those are supposed to retail at $12.99, by the way. And the battle packs, who knows, those will probably be exclusives to one lucky retailer. Speaking of new toys, we've got some new toys coming to Target, confirming some rumors as well as a new item. Here are the latest from the Target computers. We have the Ambush at Ilum battle pack. It's going to go on sale for $19.99. Now, this is said to contain the long-rumored Padme in her Clone Wars Snow Bunny outfit.
Oh.
Yeah, but keep in mind, even though this is based on Clone Wars cartoon a concept there, they're going to have a realistic style, the figures. So they're done with the Tartakovsky-styled figures. I would have really liked to have seen this last battle pack actually have that look, especially for the Snow Bunny, but what are you going to do? The Battle of Felucia battle pack, this is most likely going to contain, we've talked about this on the show prior, Aayla Secura and Commander Bly. The Darth Vader with coin folder, well, we talked about this last week too. This is confirmed to be showing up in stores. There's even a DPCI code for Target here. And those Order 66 2-packs that we talked about, some DPCI numbers for that as well. Now, we mentioned what those most likely will be. Battle of Geonosis, Capture of the Tantive IV, and Jedi Training on Dagobah. Most likely those will be related, so check those out. Also, for those of you who've pre-ordered the Death Star briefing set from Entertainment Earth, there is a box image available, so you can see what this is going to look like on your shelf. For those of you who keep your toys in the package like I do, it's not a bad setup, actually. Short of them actually sitting, they're standing around a conference table. And Vader is choking Admiral Mahdi, and it looks great. I'm really happy with this, with the way this looks in the package. I was kind of concerned because it's such a cool idea, and I didn't want to see it wasted with just kind of having them all, you know, standing, you know, next to each other without some kind of decorative background. But this looks great.
They definitely spaced it out enough and gave it enough depth by changing the heights of the figures to make it look like it's almost a circular pattern. So
right, yeah,
or semicircle, I guess it would be. So it looks great. Very glad that I ordered mine.
Yeah, me too. Also in vehicle news, SACE-10's Jedi Starfighter, the Target exclusive repainted version, is going to be coming out in the 2007 30th Anniversary Collection. Check it out. We've got high-res photos for your viewing pleasure at rebelscum.com. And speaking of Target, the electronic lightsabers are now on sale through this weekend for $17.99. Also 10% off other selected Star Wars roleplay items in the toy department. Thanks to our reader, Tim Rice, for the scanned image that you can also check out at rebelscum.com.
Perfect for Halloween.
That's right. Now, I don't know if these are the new spring-loaded. I have not seen these yet. I know they're showing up at some stores. I've not seen them. I'm really excited for the spring-loaded.
I know at our Target, locally here, it is not.
Oh, okay. So it's the older versions.
It was the ones that were still on the shelf, so.
Okay. Well, those are good, too.
Yes.
Now, I did receive the first in the comic 2-packs line, the Kirkanos and Karnor Jax. I got mine from Entertainment Earth, and I did receive it this week. Yours is on back order, right?
Yeah, because I ordered from StarWarsShop.com.
Now, I'm going to try to get this thing. Now, I'm going to try to do a little mini review here. Just some basic thoughts as I look at this. First of all, I love the packaging. Pete, what do you think?
Packaging looks fantastic. I love the fact that they packed the comic in issue number 6 of the Crimson Empire series into the package with it, and the artwork looks fantastic.
Yeah. On the back, you got the other three in this line pictured up, the Vader with the Rebel Trooper, the Tarkin with the Stormtrooper, and the Chewie with the Han Solo in Stormtrooper guise. You've seen these pictures before. I'm happy with the way it looks in the package. When it comes to the figures, now I had sort of suspected this, that the helmets looked a little out of proportion. They looked a little too big. It looks like they just sort of hollowed out the head of your typical Power of the Force 2 Royal Guard and kind of slapped it on. It's too big to where it's a little distracting for me. Super articulation on these things. At least for me, in my opinion, it's super articulated. I know some of you collectors out there would disagree, but a little too much articulation for my taste. They look very G.I. Joe, but all in all, I'm pretty happy with it. I know it sounds like I'm being hypercritical, but I'm happy with them. I think they're going to look great out of the package, and the artwork is so nice that they'll look good inside the package as well. So if you haven't had a chance to pick this up, I think you're going to like it. And, you know, it's the first one, and this is an exclusive. So if you're going to collect this line, you got to have the first one. Pete, any thoughts?
No, you pretty much covered it. I'm not the best color man in baseball for nothing, Ronnie.
Speaking of Karnor Jax and Kier Kanos, the Jedi Journals at RebelScum.com celebrates the release of the two-pack this week with the inclusion of the Crimson Empire series into the comic index. So make sure you check that out, too, if you want to get more of the backstory on these characters.
Sideshow Radio updates us once again this week with confirmation that Asajj Ventress will in fact be the next EU choice for their 1/6 scale line, and they are currently working on it as we speak. There are photos of the unpainted version of the figure available on RebelScum.com. And anyone who missed out on the Endor Strike Force figures, or just wants to pick up an individual figure, the pre-orders for those are on their way, starting with the Rebel Sergeant, which is coming up the day this show is released.
Oh, there are more of these? Or are these the same three?
These are the same three. They are
being offered individually.
Being offered individually.
Are they exclusive versions?
They are not exclusive versions. The exclusive versions were packaged with the bundle that they gave that they had for pre-order. That where you had to buy
all three of them in order to get the
They they had that set up actually pretty nicely because the bundle they're going to get theirs first. Everybody that ordered the bundle will get the. Their figures first, and then the individual pre-orders will be shipped after that. Hmm. And of course, you shave. Of course,
actually, all these guys are.
Yeah, none of these guys shave. Of course, you can save on the shipping because all three figures are going to be shipped together. And also, a $25 gift card was included. Now, it would have been nice had they given us a little more heads up on some of that stuff. But for them, it probably didn't matter all that much because, they sold out right away anyway. So there's no need to really overly publicize this stuff because the people who wanted it were just getting it as a bonus, and I don't think it would have changed your mind to have a $25 gift card in there.
Did I mention that I'm surprised that these sold out and that I hate them?
I think you have mentioned that in previous shows.
I'm being harsh. I'm joking. I don't hate them. I'm just disappointed that they were the ones out of the box for this. They're doing a Troopers, and we get Endor Rebel. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I'm sorry.
That's all there was for Sideshow. So.
Okay. Dun-dun-dun. And a follow-up to our Gentle Giant news from last week, it is official. They have officially announced that Obi-Wan, Old Ben Kenobi, mini-bust will be due in May 2007. We ask, what better way to commemorate Star Wars' 30th anniversary than with this master of the old Jedi mind trick? Be sure to check out Gentle Giant's site for more news, as well as some other items that they have recently announced. But I'm very excited, because this is going to be my first one. My first Gentle Giant mini-bust. And, man, it looks great. I'm so excited for this one. No news right now on when the pre-orders are going to start, but you can imagine that this one is probably going to be tough to get. And Gentle Giant doesn't necessarily have the best track record with these things, with these on sales. They move fast. The server crashes frequently. So I don't know what I'm getting myself into.
RebelScum.com has posted photos of the Attackus Metal Collection, Death Star Hall, and Millennium Falcon, which will be in stock the 15th of November, available for purchase on the Attackus America website. Now, this is a set that includes several different pieces, and again, it's a metal set, so it's got a display portion for the Death Star landing bay and hall, the hall where Obi-Wan and Darth Vader duel, and then also a cutout portion of the Millennium Falcon that shows the entranceway to the Millennium Falcon that everybody runs to. Most of the figures are between 4 and 5 inches tall, and with obviously R2-D2 being the smallest one, but they're going to have a Darth Vader, Obi-Wan Kenobi, obviously Old Ben, Stormtrooper Commander, Stormtrooper Vanguard, Stormtrooper Sentry, Stormtrooper Marksman, C-3PO, R2-D2, and we'll also have a Luke disguised as a Stormtrooper. So this is one of the first sets, the metal sets, to come to America. So hopefully this will be the first of many, but it's a very cool set. It's got a lot of different ways you can position all the characters and put everybody in there.
Yeah,
it's spots.
Right. It is an absolute great little diorama. Well, I shouldn't say little. It's not that little. This diorama is very impressive, but just there's some really limited numbers on these things. The Millennium Falcon in the hallway, which are the two largest pieces, are only limited to 400 are going to be produced. Now, the figures themselves are going to be limited to 2,500 pieces. So you're going to have a lot more figures than you do the actual kind of diorama portion of it. So, man, this is a pretty cool thing.
Also want to drive you real quick to our Rebel Scum poll, which surrounds Corgi this week. As a follow-up to that announcement that Corgi is merging with Master Replicas, Rebel Scum is asking its readers if anyone would want to see them do a line of die-cast vehicles, since that's what Corgi is known for. So check it out on Rebel Scum. Throw your vote in there and let us know whether you would or would not like to see that happen for Corgi.
And we haven't forgot. We made the promise we were going to try to get somebody from Master Replicas on the show to sort of give us an idea of what this means for Master Replica collectors. I personally would like to know. So look for that in an upcoming episode of the Forcecast. As soon as the dust settles over there, so to speak, I'm sure that they'll be a little more willing to talk. And for those of you wanting to get a jump start on your Star Wars Christmas ornament collection, images of the 2006 Kurt S. Adler Christmas ornament packaging have turned up in our Rebel Scum forums. The ones pictured were found by forum member Jedi Rain Man at his local Walmart for $4.84 each. And chalk this up in the strange category, but Hong Kong company Hot Toys is planning to release a brand new Star Wars collectible, the Chubby series. This is a series of toys that combine Star Wars with the concept of a Russian nesting doll. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with this, you've probably seen them from time to time at, I don't know, in Grandma's attic, maybe. But what it is that, you know, you open up, you have a kind of a large bowling pin-looking doll shape. How else to describe it? You open it up, and there's another one inside, and then another one inside, and another one inside. So that's what these are. But it's, you know, the Russian nesting doll meets Star Wars. Now, each of these dolls will consist of three different sizes, each one representing the different stages of that particular character in each episode of the entire saga. Characters will include heroes, villains, and Sith. First wave, set to include a set of six Star Wars characters. Darth Vader will be in this debut wave and consist of a big-sized Vader doll in a medium-sized Anakin, and then a nest-up of a small version of Episode 1 Kid Anakin. So, for those of you looking for the weird and the wacky, look no further than the flash drive Vader and the Russian nesting doll Vader. That's going to do it for collecting this week. As always, check out links to the photos and the stories we referenced on our show notes at theforce.net and rebelscum.com.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
And kicking off gaming this week, we've got several updates regarding the Forces of Corruption expansion to the Empire at War PC game. If you check out StarWars.com, they have a trailer featuring Tiber Zahn, who is the leader of the Zahn Consortium, who is the lead smuggling ring that's taking on the Empire and the Alliance in this new update. And there's also a journal entry from Jill Bostic, who is the director of game design at Petroglyph, who designed the game. And you can walk through, and he kind of takes you through the updates on the game and about how they've changed some of the vehicles. They've added in some things like, of course, the Executor, Darth Vader's Super Star Destroyer, which is obviously probably a very cool ship to fly around in the game with. But there, what he talks about is the separation between the fact that the factions, the Rebel Alliance and the Empire, pretty much work along the same line as far as the rules go. They're kind of tied into the same thing. Well, the underworld factions get to work outside the rules. So there are certain things that they can do that the Empire and the Alliance can't.
Well, that's cool.
And that brings them an additional leg up in certain situations.
So are the real rebels here? The scoundrels?
Well, I don't think they're the rebels. I think they're just in it for power. They don't care as long as their next meal comes to the table. So check that out on StarWars.com as well. And if you'd like to try to conquer the hyperspace lanes with the best fleet of starships you can muster from all the eras of the Star Wars saga, check out Wizards of the Coast, which has updated us with all the information you want to know about the Starship Battles Miniatures game due in November. Check out the link on Rebel Scum or our show notes for a direct link to the Starship Battles homepage at wizardsofthecoast.com.
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father, before the dark times. Before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future. Beyond the Outer Rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Bosplitty.
Fans of the hyperspace web strips can look forward to the fourth installment of the popular Evasive Action series. This final chapter is once again written by Paul Enns and illustrated by Tom Hodges. In 2004, hyperspace members were introduced to Jedi Padawans Drake Logan, Akira, and Zonder in the web strip series Reversal of Fortune. Having survived Order 66, the near Jedi return to Coruscant, only to find Inquisitors hunting them in a phase of action recruitment. And starting to find their stride as anonymous heroes, the trio tangled with Prince Shisor in Evasive Action Prey. In Evasive Action Endgame, Padawans are forced to come out of hiding and directly face their destinies and their ultimate nightmare, the new Sith Lord, Darth Vader. Check this out coming up in this winter. And as a follow-up to last year's Dressing a Galaxy, the Costumes of Star Wars, Insight Editions and Palace Press are putting out Sculpting a Galaxy. This book will cover firsthand the experiences of Lauren Peterson, one of Industrial Light and Magic's veteran model makers who's worked on all six Star Wars films. The book has 224 pages with over 300 full-color photographs and illustrations from the Lucasfilm archives. This book will be sold in regular and limited edition sets, with the limited edition including a 12-page booklet highlighting some classic models, perforated postcards, accordion-style foldouts containing cutouts of ships, and a 16-page booklet of additional historical details about the model shop. Also included is a DVD of Star Wars documentaries and behind-the-scenes imagery gathered and produced by award-winning producer Van Ling. The limited edition book comes in a massive clamshell box that features a detailed recreation of the Millennium Falcon's rear quarter. Inside are cubby holes for storing the actual three-dimensional models that are included with the book. Peterson has faithfully recreated one of the lost models of Star Wars, a version of Luke's landspeeder that includes removable figures of Luke Skywalker, R2-D2, C-3PO, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. The speeder comes with a reflective stand to recreate the simple mirrored skiff effect employed by the filmmakers to make the appearance the vehicle was floating. Also in the limited edition are seven hand-painted reproductions of Death Star surface panels modeled by Lauren Peterson. At the start of Star Wars production, the Death Star surface was one of many models that Peterson was charged with producing. And now he brings that experience to readers and collectors with seven sections that can be laid out in varying configurations to form a stretch of the Death Star surface. The limited edition also includes a supplementary 32-page softbound book, From Putty to Pixels, showcasing computer graphic renderings of digital models from the Star Wars films, and it also comes with a certificate of authenticity.
That is a robust package if I ever saw one.
It is. The price will certainly reflect the difference as far as how much the limited edition will be as opposed to the regular edition. But fans of the Dressing the Galaxy book will definitely think that this is very cool. And they've got pictures of it on StarWars.com. So check it out.
Now, Pete, you had an opportunity to talk to our resident EU expert, Jay Shepard, a.k.a. Jovial Jay, about a recent event that he attended with Darth Bane author Drew Karpyshyn.
Yeah, and Jay had some great insight on that, so we'll drop right into that. We're joined right now by our resident expert of all things that are print in Star Wars, Jovial Jay. Jay, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing tonight, Pete?
Very well. Appreciate you joining us for a little bit. Jay is here to share with us a little bit. He was lucky enough to go and visit one of the signings that Drew Karpyshyn had for his book, Darth Bane, Path of Destruction. And Jay's going to give us a quick overview of what he talked about and some of the cool things that went on there.
Yeah, this was just a couple weeks ago. I got an email saying that there was going to be a signing that evening. So I quickly went home and checked my wife to make sure it was going to be okay, and then ran over to our local Books A Million. And yeah, Drew Karpyshyn came in and was talking about Darth Bane. He brought with him about a dozen members of the local 501st Old Line Garrison. And, you know, of course, you got to have the bad guys because Darth Bane's a bad guy, even though, you know, this is kind of pre-Empire. But it was pretty exciting. They had a lot of people showed up, and I think a lot of people came by the bookstore and looked in and said, you know, hey, what's going on? There's a lot of stormtroopers here, and they stopped and wanted to take a look. He came out and was reading some excerpts from his book. He read kind of the preface or the introduction, which is a couple pages. This kind of gives you sets the tone, lets you know a little bit about who these Sith are, kind of what's going on in the galaxy, because this takes place 1,000 years before the Battle of Yavin. And then he read a another excerpt from the first third of the book. There was a little space battle going on, so he was just reading this piece, and of course stopped about halfway through to wet everyone's whistle. And then he took questions from the audience, and you know, they had the standard questions about, you know, how do I get into writing, and what was your background, and do I need to know about the comic books that Darth Bane was in to get enjoyment out of this? And his answers were basically write a lot, and his background being that he wrote the Knights of the Old Republic game for BioWare. He just answered an ad in a newspaper, and it turned out they were doing this Star Wars game, so he was all excited about that. And he said you don't really have to read the comics, that the book stands on its own, but you can get more information and more enjoyment out of the book if you have read the comic Jedi versus Sith, where Darth Bane made his first appearance. You know, he was a really nice guy. He spent time talking to the fans, signing books. You know, it wasn't a huge crowd, so he was able to take a little more time with everybody. And he did give us some pronunciations of some of the characters' names in the story. One of the ones that probably people will have the most trouble with, there's a Dark Lord or a Sith Lord named, his name's Kopesh. Is how Drew pronounced it, but his is the name that's spelled K-O-P-E-C-Z. So just in case people are wondering how to pronounce that, it is Kopesh.
Yeah, that's a good thing to throw in there, just because, like I said, when I was reading it, you stop at those words that you can't pronounce because you're always cycling through whether you can. So it is Kopesh, and hopefully people can gloss over that one a little bit more now.
Yeah, and I do like going to the author readings, kind of like I was talking with you about earlier, is that when you go there, they end up just talking about the characters in their book or words in their book that you may not have any idea how to pronounce, and all of a sudden, you know, they'll throw it out, and you're like, oh, okay, that's how that's pronounced. But I think one of the coolest questions that he got during the Q&A section, there was a little boy who raised his hand behind me, and Drew called on him and said, yeah, go ahead, and the boy said, when's the movie coming out? And Drew got a chuckle out of that, and he said, well, right now I don't have any plans to have a movie made out of the book, so you're just going to have to read it. But, of course, he wouldn't be adverse if they decided to use this for another film or anything like that. And he was also asked if he has any plans to do any further books in the Star Wars universe, which he doesn't at the moment, but he did mention that this was the first Old Republic book in that timeline. They've done comics in the Old Republic era, but this is the first book in that timeline. So if the sales are good, there's no reason why Del Rey won't do other books in that area. And since, you know, he's kind of the father of the Old Republic era here, I mean, having written Knights of the Old Republic and now the Darth Bane book, you know, he hopes he'll be asked back, and he'd love to do some more stuff in here. And having read the beginning of the book, I got to say, this is some good stuff. I'm waiting to see how it ends.
Yeah, I think he does a real good blend of getting into the Star Wars universe, but not trying to jumble too much stuff together that turns you off. It doesn't pull you out of the story. You're kind of pulled in right away, and he keeps you there. So how did you kind of find him to be, Jay? You know, I know that Timothy Zahn tends to be pretty proper and, you know, yeah, very nice guy, but how did Drew come off?
Well, he's very Canadian. He mentioned he was from the University of Alberta, and right there you could hear his accent popping out. He's just really kind of relaxed. You know, his introduction into kind of the business of writing came through a video game company, BioWare, which is located in Canada, I believe. And, you know, he kind of exuded that sort of, you know, working for a video game company. He came out in shorts and a t-shirt. You know, and I was like, I wasn't sure if this was the author or not, you know, because usually, I mean, basically I've been to the Timothy Zahn signings before, and like you say, he is pretty proper, and he dresses very nice, and Drew was just really casual, and that's kind of how he presented himself, just really casual, and, you know, just having a good time. He was happy to see all the fans out there, and very personable, and I mean, just a great guy, just, you know, one of those guys you just want to hang out with. He's got all sorts of cool stuff to talk about and say, and just, you know, very nice.
Well, thanks for stopping by, Jay. We really appreciate you giving us
sure.
a little insight on Drew and the novel here. Keep tuning in as we're going to get more and more into the novels and letting you know where you guys need to start with your books and some reviews on stuff. And Jay's going to be nice enough to chime in with those here and again so that we can keep up on what's new and what's good. Thanks again, Jay.
All right. Take care.
Okay, so it is time for this week's EU Character of the Week. Pete, who do you have for us this week?
EU Character of the Week is Grand Admiral Thrawn of the Timothy Zahn novels.
Okay, so we have been asked to kind of provide a little context for these characters before we actually go with EU Character of the Week. So, as you mentioned, this is probably the central, one of the central characters in the Timothy Zahn novels, which is kind of the trilogy of novels that kicked off the Star Wars Renaissance back in 1995.
Yeah, and it's remained the kind of the standard because they were very well written and they really went along with the original ideals of the original trilogy. So,
yeah, they're great books. If you haven't read them yet, I would say that's probably one of the best places to start in terms of kind of building your EU library, as it were. So tell us what era are we in? Where do we find ourselves with this character?
Grand Admiral Thrawn is kind of an outer rim character that doesn't really have any dealings with the Empire until later on in his life. He was born prior to the Battle of Yavin. Not sure what, I give you a little background on what happened prior to that, but he didn't have much interaction with the canon characters until later on in the actual original trilogy era.
So we're talking most of the events that really mark this character are post-Return of the Jedi.
Yes. Most of his interactions inside the Empire do come in that era, again, through the Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire novels.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
We look to the Empire this week for our EU Character of the Week as we check in with one of the most revered Imperial officers of them all, Grand Admiral Thrawn. Thrawn, whose full name is Mithra Nerodo, grew up a commoner on Chilla and established himself among the Chiss people with a distinguished military career. Once he earned a commission in the Expeditionary Fleet, he became a merit adoptive of the ruling Mith family. His early career success granted him status as a Trialborn, which was the name of those among the Chiss race who were in the military but had the choice to return to their families or maintain their place in their adoptive families after they retired. He became the youngest ever force commander in the fleet and assumed command of Picket Force 2 on the frontier. As he gained influence and renown, he also drew the ire of the ruling families for what they termed overly aggressive tactics. His defense of the region led to interference in a dispute between Praga the Hutt and the smuggling vessel Bargain Hunter. He destroyed Praga's ship and kept the command crew of the Bargain Hunter aboard his command ship, Springhawk. He developed a close bond with the navigator, George Cardassian, and had fleeting romantic feelings for the co-pilot, Maris Fazri. When a large, unidentified fleet entered the sector, Thrawn investigated and found a large Separatist force. Despite being greatly outnumbered, the Chiss fleet decimated the invaders, leaving only the command ship intact.
Attack those Federation starships, quickly!
The Separatist leader, Kinmin Doriana, asked for parley and told Thrawn about his mission to intercept the Jedi ship Outbound Flight. He painted the Jedi as enemies and convinced him of their threat.
I sense a plot to destroy the Jedi.
Thrawn tracked down the ship and destroyed it. Darth Sidious took notice of his prowess, but was preoccupied by other endeavors.
We will watch your career with great interest.
Thrawn continued to be too aggressive for the Chiss leadership and was banned from the fleet and his people. He retired to the Outer Rim until 15 years before A New Hope, when destiny brought the Empire to him once again. Imperial Captain Voss Park discovered him on a remote jungle planet after he once again throttled a superior force, proving his skills. Voss convinced him to return and join the Empire with the promise that Palpatine would allow him to return to his people with better technology to allow him to protect them. Thrawn began his training, and as before, rose through the ranks very quickly with superior tactics and impeccable strategy. His rise was quite surprising, as there was a general dislike and phobia of alien species among Imperial officers, and they were openly discriminated against.
We don't serve their kind here.
Thrawn's blue skin and red eyes made him an easy target. In spite of this, he became a favorite of Palpatine, and often appeared with him in public. He was among the officers that commissioned the Executor, and was made captain of the Star Destroyer Vengeance, which was the flagship of High Inquisitor Jarek. This became a dual mission, as Palpatine asked Thrawn to watch the ambitious Jarek and report back to him. He was also given use of the Star Destroyer Admonitor to chart the unknown regions of the galaxy.
Beyond the Outer Rim.
He used this to reestablish contact with the Chiss and set up a secret base for himself on a remote planet and begin an information network known as the Hand of Thrawn. After the Battle of Yavin, Thrawn was assigned to the Emperor's retreat on Naboo, where he had several interactions with various spacefarers who worked with him on difficult tasks, assignments, and tests. This allowed him to continue to make important contacts and impress Palpatine.
Good.
He also gained favor with Darth Vader when he worked in a plot to help remove a Black Sun lieutenant that had become a threat to the Empire. Thrawn disguised himself as the bounty hunter Jodo Kast to assist in the capture. As thanks, Vader gave Thrawn authority to call upon his personal Nogri Death Commandos. In a secret ceremony after the Battle of Hoth, which was attended only by Palpatine and Mara Jade, Thrawn was given the rank of Grand Admiral and took the place of Grand Admiral Zarin in the Emperor's Circle of 12.
Bye.
He returned to his duties charting the unknown regions and remained there, keeping in sporadic contact with the Empire through intelligence officer Isani Isard. 4 years after the Battle of Endor, word finally reached him that the Empire was on the verge of extinction, and he made his return. As the last remaining Grand Admiral, the Moffs conceded control of the Empire and hoped that his genius could restore order. He laid in wait, gathering elements for his plan from the Emperor's secret storehouse on Wayland. He discovered three key items. A cloaking device.
A cloaking device.
A cloning complex.
Cloners.
And the mad Jedi clone, Joris Sabaoth. Sabaoth used his force influence to coordinate the Imperial forces, and in exchange, Thrawn offered the unborn twins of Leia Organa Solo to train as his apprentices. Thrawn used his cloaking device and brilliant strategy to win several major victories against the New Republic, all the while building a clone army and his Katana fleet. Thrawn had seemed to gain the upper hand, but did not realize that Leia had spoken to the Nogri and told them of the deception and oppression of Vader and Thrawn.
Someone who loves you.
In what would have been the climactic battle to win the war, Thrawn's assassin fatally stabbed him in the chest. Rumors persisted that Thrawn had survived and even had returned from the dead to lead the Empire, although it could never be confirmed. No one can be sure of his ultimate demise, as the capabilities to clone himself and his genius of forethought make the possibility of his return very real. You can read more about Grand Admiral Thrawn in his first and most prominent appearance, Timothy Zahn's Heir to the Empire series, which included Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and The Last Command. You can also follow his appearances in Outbound Flight, The Missed Encounter in Star Wars Adventure Journal No. 7, Dark Forces, Soldier for the Empire, Galaxy of Fear, The Swarm, the Star Wars TIE Fighter PC game, X-Wing Rogue Squadron 25, Command Decision in the Star Wars Adventure Journal No. 11, and Tatooine Ghost. You can also read about the rumors of his return and the appearance of his clone in Spectre of the Past and Vision of the Future, which is referred to as the Hand of Thrawn duology.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message after the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
It's a trick. Send no reply.
And in our listener mail this week, we've got some voicemail, which is exciting. So we're going to start off with Phil in Illinois. This is his Star Wars tale.
Hi, this is Philip in Illinois with a Star Wars story for you guys at the Force.net. Great podcast. I'm kind of going for the classic Star Wars story because... back when I'm my undergrad at San Francisco Conservatory of Music, I was living there in the late 90s when the special edition came out. And, of course, a lot of us lined up and camped out overnight to get tickets, the big theater they had there on Gary Road. Anyway, you know, it's like the people who are the real hardcores are the bounty hunters up front and those of us in the back and you know, we're kind of midway down the street. And so, you know, around midnight, you know, every hour, this guy who looked like a Wookiee ran down going, Star Wars, yeah! Or Empire Strikes Back, yeah! And I had another friend who was there camped out with me for Return of the Jedi. You know, we're all in costume while we're camped out, by the way. And, of course, you know, the guy runs down the street going, Return of the Jedi, yeah! And my buddy, just to be real sarcastic, starts yelling back, Popeye! Popeye the movie, yeah! He's a little Popeye fan, so... Anyway, it was very funny, and, you know, the guy dressed as Han Solo is being dragged up to the front by the bounty hunters and all that, so just a little bit of nostalgia to when the special editions were released, and we all, of course, dressed up for Phantom Menace while we still lived in San Francisco. This is before all the nice little phone ordering they would let us do for that particular theater. So, anyway, great podcast. Keep up the good work, and thanks a bunch for listening to my submission. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that, Phil. We appreciate it. And, Pete, you've got another Star Wars tale here.
Yeah, this one comes from Nick from Tinley Park, Illinois. Getting a lot of love from Illinois this week. We appreciate that. Just wanted to thank you for bringing the weekly Forcecast to everyone. I wish more of my favorite sites did such a thing to keep me as thoroughly informed as you always do. As with everyone, I don't always have time to stay up to date on all the movies, television series, bands, comic books, and so forth that I so much love. The weekly Forcecast really seems like a must for any Star Wars fan because it is so invaluable. I enjoy your discussions on the show, am deeply intrigued with the EU character profiles, and find the 70-plus minutes of the Forcecast to be an enjoyable highlight of my weekends. I just lay back and relax when I listen. I voted for you on Podcast Alley as well. Thank you, and keep up the excellent work. I would like to share a Star Wars story with you. It's just a lot of driving in the dark on a stormy night with me being 40 minutes late to a 3:24 a.m. screening of Revenge of the Sith. Pretty much a bummer of a story, but I had seen a midnight showing earlier, which started late, though I did sustain mild sunburn sitting in line for Episode 1 tickets back in 99, and ditched a math final at community college to do so. Had been ditching all semester, so it wasn't that big of a deal. I sat next to a guy dressed up as Darth Maul on premiere night, but didn't we all? Anyway, take care, and I will continue to look forward to my weekly dose of the Force.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Nick. You know, there was a Darth Maul when I saw Episode 1 for the first time. Well, no, technically not. Not the very first time, because when Episode 1 premiered for me, I guess this is my Star Wars tale. When Episode 1 premiered, I was working at a movie theater on campus at Ohio State, and we actually got to see it about 2 days before the premiere. We sent a couple of employees to Cincinnati to pick up a printing of it. So we had our own little employee sneak. So there were no costumes, but I did wear my Star Wars t-shirt. Yeah, that was me. But when I saw it on premiere night at midnight, oh yeah, lots of Darth Mauls. And our last Star Wars tale for this week comes from Jedi Pat in Butler, Pennsylvania. He says, "Hey guys, just wanted to let you know that your podcast is freaking awesome. I'm a senior in high school and listen to the Forcecast on the bus ride to school. I've been a listener since last year when it started out, and it has been getting even better the entire time. Just wanted to let you know that when it is said that a video game has gone gold, that just means that LucasArts, or whoever is making the game, is done and it's been sent off to be copied and shipped. You seemed a little confused about it last week, so now you know." Thank you for that correction. I'd never heard that expression. And I mean, I have no excuse, or I have an excuse, because I'm not a big gamer. Pete, you have no excuse to not know the vernacular.
I was just testing everyone.
Patrick goes on to say, "I don't have any major Star Wars stories, but I do have a couple little ones. First, I saw Star Wars when it was re-released in 1997 at the theater. At that time, I was still at the age when I thought all girls were kind of gross, but that all ended when I saw Leia in her slave outfit. I guess you could say that Princess Leia was the first girl that I ever had a crush on, and she doesn't even live in the same galaxy. Another story about Star Wars happened to a friend of mine on the day Episode 3 was released. My friend was assigned a detention for being late to class a few too many times. It just so happened to be May 19th, and he was very disappointed when he learned that he would have to miss part of the movie if he stayed in detention after school, so he begged and pleaded with the teacher to let him leave early. She finally got so fed up with him and asked why, so he told her that he had tickets for Episode 3 and was going to miss it. I guess he must have also done a force mind trick on her because she let him out with plenty of time to get to the movie. I don't know about you guys, but I had a hard time trying to think of another movie that he could have gotten out of detention to use. Keep up the awesome work, and the Force is certainly strong with you." Thank you, Patrick. We appreciate that. I love these Star Wars tales, and this one really took me back because I have to say that, like so many, Princess Leia made a man out of me. And we have a couple more voicemails. This next one coming from we couldn't make out what his name was, but he's from California. We made that out. He's got some questions about something we talked about last week.
"Hello, this is Giselle from Mahama, California, and I was listening to the Forcecast, and I noticed you mentioned the new DVD jackets for the Star Wars DVDs, but you didn't exactly give, or maybe I missed it, give the website where you can get them. I looked at Untamed Cinema, and they don't have anything on there for it, and they're not on the show notes, so if you could please put it on the new show note or repeat it on the air. I'm having trouble finding them. So if you could do that, I'd be the best. Keep the podcast going. Listen to it every time. Thanks."
Well, Pete, there you go.
Yes, I am quite sorry about that. I missed that in my show notes last week, so I promise that it will be there this week, and you will be able to click through and see all the DVD covers in their respective glories.
And our last voicemail this week comes from Jason in Houston, Texas.
Yes, I'm hoping I'm calling the right phone number, but this is Jason from Houston, Texas, calling for the Force.net official podcast. Just had a couple quick questions. Well, first, I want to say you guys are doing a tremendous job if I did reach the right number. Just want to say real quick that, number one, I have a question regarding collecting. Is there a site or sites that you guys can recommend that a collector could go to get up-to-the-minute information regarding a certain item, like you know, what it would be worth if you decided to sell it? And second of all, you know, I forgot my second question because I'm about to get hit here in traffic, and it made me forget my question. So let me think about it, and I'll send you guys an email later on. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks for the question, Jason. And I have to say that really the days of price guides are pretty much over. You know, the world we live in now with eBay, that is probably the best price guide there is, because it's kind of like the stock market. You can see exactly what the market is for that particular figure or collectible. So really, I think that's your best bet. And it's free. You don't have to buy anything. There is also a really nice website out there called alltroops.com. Pete and I both subscribe to that, and it will let you keep a running inventory of your Star Wars collection and does update with pricing information. So you can kind of, at any point, once you get all your collection uploaded into this, you can see what it's worth. And it does fluctuate and does change. So that's another option for you to check out. But really, the gold standard at this point is eBay. That's what really matters. And that's pretty much what most people look at when they're trying to determine the value of a collection or of a collectible. Now, Steve Sansweet will tell you it doesn't matter what's in the price guide. It doesn't matter what's on eBay. What matters is what is the value to you. And if you'd like to send us a voicemail or a Star Wars tale of your own, you can do that at 330-871-4TFN or give us a call for free via Skype. You can just look for the username ForceCast. And you can do it the old-fashioned way, too. You can type it out long way and send it to podcast@theforce.net or send us an MP3 with your Star Wars tale or question. Again, podcast@theforce.net. Well, that's going to do it for this week, but fear not. We'll be back in just 7 short days. We want to thank our sponsor, Official Picks, for officially licensed Star Wars photos and autographs. Look no further, officialpicks.com. That's picks with an X.com.
And we'd also like to thank our guest in the cantina, Kyle Newman. Join us next week for part 3 of our chat with Kyle.
And don't forget about our promotion with the George and Me documentary DVDs. We've got 2 to give away. You've got to answer Pete's trivia question and my trivia question. And you will walk away with one of these DVDs from our friends at Five Heads Hall Productions. Now, Pete, your question is,
what is the name of the character that parodied George Lucas on The Simpsons?
If you know the answer, be the first to send an email to podcast@theforce.net and make sure you put George and Me trivia in the subject line. Now, we have 2 copies to give away, so if you know the answer to Pete's trivia question, send that email. If you think you know the answer to mine, which is, name the day, month, and year of George Lucas's near-fatal crash, sort of redefined his life as a young man. If you know the answer to that, give us a call at 330-871-4TFN, or if you're on Skype, there's no reason why you shouldn't be, it's free, you can Skype us at username ForceCast. The first correct answer we get via voicemail will get the DVD. And don't forget about our other promotion. We wouldn't be in the top 10 by the end of the month, October 31st, over at PodcastAlley.com. So if you haven't voted yet, please get over there and vote. Again, that's PodcastAlley.com. Now, we've made it very simple. We've got a button on our podcast page over at TheForce.net, and we always provide a link in our show notes, which can be found, again, at TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. So please tell your friends we need to be in the top 10. What's in it for you, you ask? What we're looking for is if we're in the top 10 by the end of the month, we're going to do 10 straight days of giveaways, prizes provided by officialpicks.com. So please help us out.
And keep those Star Wars tales and all your feedback coming to us. You can contact us a few different ways. You can email us at podcast@theforce.net. You can leave us a voicemail on our Skype line, which is username ForceCast, or by dialing 330-871-4TFN. And make sure to check out our dedicated forum on rebelscum.com. We've got a bunch of new information up there, including a question about EU character of the week that I'd like people to chime in on. So head on over there, take a look at that, and make sure to keep those Star Wars tales coming to us.
And playing us out this week is I've Got a Bad Feeling About This by Sucklord on Suckadelic Records. Thanks to Dustin. Good luck, Dustin and Shannon. And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
Podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.